good morning. This morning was wonderful. Thank you for your meditation. Any questions about Dhamma and stuff that we talk about in the evening? The questions and answer session. But in particular, the meditation which I've been talking about earlier, last night, and early days, and what you've heard me talk about before. We do call it Samadhi in the Pali language, which is the same as in Sanskrit, Samadhi. And you also know, those of you who've listened to me teaching for a long time, it does not mean concentration. That translation has caused a lot of difficulty for people because it's made them frustrated, it's made them disappointed, simply because of an unfortunate translation by someone who did not meditate, so they gave it a good try and never really understood what it meant. And of course, its meaning is stillness. Samadhi seems to get so perfectly still. And what we mean by stillness is there's no movement, nothing's moving at all. Everything has slowed down and stopped. And that is actually the meaning of this meditation. Things slow down and stop. When they do slow down and stop, it has amazing experiences. Earlier on this retreat, I mentioned that when things become still, they disappear. They vanish. It is like the veils which hide what's inside disappear. You go deeper and deeper and deeper inside to find the truth of things. And this is not through seeing or inference, this is through direct experience. So our problem is how do we get to that point of stillness? Simply because it's our habits that we always do stuff. And the fundamental reason why we do stuff, why we find it difficult to be still, is nothing else than our sense of self, our ego. And you all know, it's a little bit of a joke, but you know, I always like to have a little bit of humor in to these talks, but it is, says a fundamental truth as well. Something from philosophy, René Descartes, who said, to do is to be. And Jean-Paul Sartre, who turned it all around and said to be is to do. And I honestly, I remember seeing this, if I had an iPhone in those days in 1970, I think when I saw this, I would take a photograph of it. But it was actually graffiti on the walls of the philosophy department at Cambridge University when I saw this quote. To be is to do, Descartes, to do is to be, Sartre, and underneath that, a modern American philosopher, dooby dooby do, Frank Sinatra. But what it refers to quotes, you know, the legitimate ones, not the joke one, was so accurate. The reason why we do stuff is because of our craving to be, our attachment to the sense of self, because that's what the sense of self does. It has to do something to exist. And if we don't do stuff, we find out we're vanishing, we're disappearing. Our identity is challenged, and we don't do anything. It's one of the reasons people find it hard to be still. What they're really giving up, what they're really renouncing is their sense of self, their identity, who they think they are. That's why it's tough. So what we actually practice is almost a little bit of deceit, a trick. In order to be still, we use the joy and happiness as a bait to draw us deeper and deeper into stillness, deeper and deeper into letting go of doing stuff. It feels good. until we can get to such a point of deep stillness, we realize there's nothing here anyway. So why not let go? We realize things like non-self avatar. From that point on, obviously, when there's no self there, then you don't have to do anything. You don't have to achieve stuff and define your identity by all your achievements. It was, I have to admire this person for one thing he did. The rest of the stuff he did was pretty much scallywag stuff. But that's a Tibetan monk, Chogyam Trungpa, who did coin the word spiritual materialism. It was a very good insight and a wonderful word to add to the description of modern Buddhism. Because in our world, we do have materialism, even monks and nuns. My monastery is bigger than your monastery. That materialism, they're like, my house is bigger than your house. I've got a better car than you have. I owe more money than you do. There is always going to be that. That's just part of the nature of defining yourself by what you do and how you act materially. But then the same thing happens with spiritual materialism. What meditation experiences have you got? Have you got first jhana yet? First jhana, that's nothing. I got that years ago. Second jhana, now that's good. Second jhana, that's nothing. I got fourth jhana. I have a three winning. That's only the start. I'm fully enlightened. Fully enlightened, that's nothing. I've got psychic powers. Fully enlightened with psychic powers, that's nothing. Only suffer is better. You actually hear that sort of called Gomayan. I mentioned this once. For those of you who never heard of this word Gomayan before, Gomayan is a Pali word. If there's nothing else in Pali you learn, Gomayan is a very good word to remember. Go means bull, Mayan means shit. So put it together, because people get upset at me, I'm not supposed to say that word. So these days, that's where Gomayan. So you know, if everyone say Gomayan, you know it's all bullshit. So don't even say that word again. So there's so much Gomayan saying, this is better than that. That's called spiritual materialism. You see that again and again and again and again. Christianity is better than Buddhism. Buddhism is better than Islam. Judaism is better than Christianity. That is spiritual materialism. What we're supposed to be totally getting rid of. And you find out, my tradition is better than your tradition. My teacher is better than your teacher. All that sort of got my hand started. But that is what happens when we have a sense of self. It means we have to do stuff. Now, the trick is that we learn how to be still, because it's so much joy and so much peace and so much freedom. And that overcomes, it counters, which is the underlying tendency just to do something. Just for the sake of doing it, just for the sake of showing that we are, we exist. It's one of the causes of depression in our modern world. If you haven't got a job, if you haven't got a family, if you're not doing something in the world, then you find that you don't have any meaning, no identity. How many people, when you actually fill in those forms on your passport or on your visa applications, they ask occupation? Now, monk, engineer, doctor, that's how we define ourselves, by what we do. Imagine if you did absolutely nothing, if you were nobody. This is again one of those wonderful sayings which I didn't invent, but I saw on the t-shirts. Three line, wonderful philosophical argument. First line, nobody is perfect. We've all heard that one before, nobody is perfect. Second line, I am a nobody. Third line, therefore I am perfect. And that's a nice funny story, but there's a lot of truth in that. If you are a somebody, you'll never be perfect. Nobody is perfect. When you become a nobody, an arahant, then you become perfect. great little rhythms of that. But anyway, let's go back to meditation now. So how do we let ourselves go? Really to disappear. It's all those things which you believe you are, which you identify with. First of all, this, your body, vanishes. Would you like to be handsome, beautiful, hot? It's really weird. When I was young, when I wanted to be attractive, not many people took photographs of me. Now I don't give a damn. And I'm always fat. I get photographed so much. Weird. And the less you are, the more people want you. Anyway, so when we learn how to let go of our body, and then let go of all the other things, let go of your wanting, your craving. It's a very difficult thing not to want. Want anything. Because we're so addicted to wanting stuff, to doing stuff. It's the reason why, when you've got nothing to do at all during the daytime, you look for something to do. You go and turn on the TV. You look in the refrigerator. You go shopping. How much stuff you have? Why do you want to go shopping in Thailand? Don't they have shops in Singapore? This is something which I just can't get my head around. The people in Perth, my disciples, they go to Singapore on holiday to go shopping. And people in Singapore, they come to Perth to go shopping. Many people go to Hong Kong. Why? Shopping. That's whenever I go up there, they say, are you going shopping in Hong Kong again? I said, well, I'm shopping. I teach meditation there. But people in Hong Kong come to Australia to go shopping. What are you doing that for? You don't need stuff. It's just something to do. We're always looking for something to do. So you have a nice holiday in Club Med, Phuket. Are you trying to do something? Trying to meditate. That's what we're doing now. That is not meditation. It's not more doing stuff. Trying to get something. Well, you can't really buy jars of limiters. Unfortunately, but it's priceless. You can't afford it. It's all the free. But we keep doing stuff instead of just sitting and doing nothing. That's the hardest thing for people to do. So, on 8 precepts, they can't watch the TV, they can't go shopping, they can't go eating in the afternoon, they can't go talking to one another. So what do you do when you've got nothing to do? You talk to yourselves. You go shopping in the fantasies of the future. All these dreams and plans which are endless. Or you just go in the shops of the past, just like people, they have all of these, what they call, downloads of the old movies, and they just go on and see which one, they've seen it so many times before, but they just want to see it again. You've thought all those thoughts so many times, but you're going to think of them again anyway. What usually happens is called, not boredom. It says you need to do something. You're addicted to doing something because you're afraid of disappearing if you don't do something. Fear. So what we counter that fear with is this great joy. So wonderful not to think, to have some silence. I don't know who said that phrase that silence is golden, but it's worth much more than gold. Silence is one of the great spiritual homes of human beings, to live in silence. Because from silence comes peace, and from peace comes happiness. peace of us. You know, sometimes we justify all the things we do, all the hard work, because we think, once we have all that hard work, once I've built my monastery, then I can relax and just take it easy. I can retire. That's what many of you do. You work really hard. Once your kids are grown up, once you've paid off all your debts, then you can take it easy and find some peace. What happens when people retire? They keep on working even harder. You just find it so difficult just to do nothing. Just to sit in their beautiful house or their apartment. They've got enough money in the bank just to keep themselves going for the simple life for the rest of their years. And still we can't stop. We get addicted to doing stuff. And that is why meditation, which is not doing things, it's stopping, it's halting, it's being still. That's why it is so controversial in the sense it goes against the grain. Which is one of the reasons why many people not understand what meditation is. Just making it into another task you have to do. Another achievement you have to get. Yes, you know, you've got your degrees from university, you've got your condo, you've got your relationship in hand. Now, what else? Now, I'll achieve meditation. I'll do that next. Another task to achieve in life. And that is not what meditation is. It's totally opposite. That is why he's so radical. It's so sometimes difficult for people to, again, get their head around to do absolutely nothing. You mean you can get enlightened that way? Then you need to put forth effort, struggle. I often quote from the suttas, the Buddha's own early life. You know when the Buddha, or the Buddha-to-be, got his first deep meditation, the first jhana, he was a young boy. He was bored, like young boys are, 7 or 8 years of age. You see the kids here, actually they disappeared on the first few days of the retreat, playing around. They can't sit down and meditate for just an hour. They're just playing around here, playing around there. But it's nice they come here. I really enjoy them. So they can actually feel that this Buddhism is inviting and it's not harsh. So later on in life they'll be attracted to meditation with their parents. But the Buddha to be, 6 or 7 years of age, sitting under a rosacle tree, while his father performed another ritual, another boring ceremony. Notice that people do have boring ceremonies. And just a little anecdote for you, that sometimes I am well connected, and when they had the Melbourne Commonwealth Games, I forget what year that was, but I got an invitation to, I think, 3 main events. It's a Commonwealth Day interfaith service at St Andrew's Cathedral in Sydney, in the presence of Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II. And because I was one of the little speakers, I was, you know, at the front and facing in the first pew, the first row of seats, Queen Elizabeth, but she was about as far as you were, so I was looking at her. And I discovered something few people know. Why Queen Elizabeth II wears broad-rimmed hats. Because imagine being a queen, you have to go through so many rites and rituals and ceremonies. And at her age, I think she was 80-something at the time, you can imagine just how bored she will get, especially in church, listening to a sermon from the Archbishop. Even I get bored listening to that. And so I was watching her, very clear view, and you saw her head droop, having a nap in church. And of course, cameras are there, but I noticed as soon as her head dropped, The rim of her hat covered her eyes, so the cameras could not see that she was snoozing. That is why they wear big hats, so when the head goes down, you can take 40 winks a snooze without anybody noticing. That's just what happens. But anyhow, when we learn how to meditate, we learn how to be still, not to do stuff. And the Buddha was going through one of those little ceremonies, getting bored. But what he did, probably because of what he had in his previous life, he didn't do anything. He just totally let go and got into this first jhana experience, which he recalled. What was it? I was 7 when I was 30, when he was 26, sorry, 35, sorry. About 28 years later, as maybe the path to enlightenment. I mention that experience of the Buddha to me simply because the 7-year-old, 8-year-old boy would not put forth much effort. He would be struggling. He was basically killing time. In the days before computer games, he didn't know what to do, that's what he did. Sat down there and totally let go. Instead of drifting off to sleep, lifted into a beautiful, still, peaceful meditation. Things vanishing. This is how it works. Now, one of the great similes which I developed in order to actually convey many messages at the same time about how to meditate, what happens, what you should do, and what you can expect. Now, that was the simile of a 1,000-petal lotus. So I'm going to repeat again here. You have heard this before, but this is such a beautiful metaphor. Number one, because it proves, it shows that every one of you can do it, without exception. Number two, is just what happens on the journey, the landmarks of meditation. It's not what you aspire for, it's not what you aim for, it's what happens. In spite of any aims. And thirdly, it gives you the very simple instructions, which are basically doing nothing, but people can't understand what doing nothing actually is. So we just call it mindfulness and kindness. The connection between letting be and kindness, compassion. As I've mentioned recently to many people, if you come and say, have a nice day, I will say, no. I will not follow your orders. Who do you think you are to tell me to have a nice day? We think that that is compassion and kindness. May all beings be happy and well. Look, be wise. All beings cannot be happy and well every day, every moment. So you are asking for something you can never get. May all beings be happy and well. May I be happy and well. You will get sick from time to time. You will get old and you will die. You are making a wish which is absolutely impossible. So there's something wrong with it. That is not compassion. That is really stupid kindness. Real kindness and compassion is the door of my heart's open to you no matter what happens. If you have the most miserable day ever, I can still be your friend. I will allow that to happen. My love for you is unconditional. So this is actually why real compassion, real metta, the door of my heart is open, no matter what, no strings attached, no coercion, no control, it's just unconditional love. Another word for that is called letting be. I'm so kind to my meditation, whatever happens, it's fine by me. And I will never kick myself up the bum if I fail, if I make a mistake. And too much kindness for that. But all my heart's open to me no matter what happens. letting things be. Letting go, letting be. That's it. Difference between letting be and letting go. Letting go is letting go of controlling, desire, wanting, ill will. The sort of movements of the mind which actually make you move, make you agitated. And whatever's left, you let it be. You let go of control, and the remainder of this moment, right now, you let it be. Kindness is you value it, no matter what it is. When we understand that, we understand what kindness is. But to really be kind, you have to be mindful, aware, deeply aware. This is much of the stuff which agitates our mind. This goes under our radar, we just don't see it. Sometimes people call that the subconscious. But really, it's just our mind is not really strong enough. Mindfulness is not strong enough to see it. Very much like when you first come in to this room in the morning, the lights aren't on, it's dark, you can't really see where you are. You might trip up over things, but when you put the lights on, you see more. When the light's intensity is increased, you see more and more and more and more. So the stronger the lights, the more you see. That's why it was mindfulness. The stronger it becomes, the more you see is what goes on in your mind. Most of which, as I say, goes under the radar. You're not conscious of it. And that's the stuff which really messes you around. What the Buddha called underlying tendencies, which we're not aware of. Old habits, things we take for granted, which causes a lot of problems. But anyway, going through the Thousand Petal Lotus, it tells you what to do, which is just being mindful and being kind. Just those two. And the lotus stands for you. Lotuses, when they are closed up at night, I'm not sure I haven't gone exploring this hotel. The only part of this hotel I know is the restaurant, this room, my hut, and the way between the three of us. I haven't gone walking on the beach. I'm a bit sort of afraid what I might find there. Especially if there's people sunbathing and somebody has a camera to take a photo of me. Hey, that young girl. A Phuket beach with his girlfriend in a bikini. It could happen. Okay, there's a little by the way story. This actually did happen to me. It taught me I've got to be really, really careful as a Buddhist monk. Sometimes you're totally innocent, but you're in a situation, if somebody had a camera, I'd be dead, my reputation would be shot. Because I used to go and teach in the prisons in a town called Bundari, which is about 120 kilometers south of Monastery in Perth. And I used to go down there in the afternoon, the only train, just hang out in the afternoon and teach in the evening. And one afternoon, just a nice sunny day, and I went for a walk on the beach. It was deserted. So many beaches in Australia, and it's not a tourist resort, this town, so no one was there. So I walked along a while, and it was so peaceful, so calm, just the waves and the sand and me. So I sat down to meditate on the beach, no one in sight. I meditated there for about a couple of hours, nice and peaceful. When you meditate deeply, you can't hear any sounds. And you can imagine, just I came out of my meditation, expected the beach to be deserted, and I realized there was someone sitting next to me on either side. And that was weird, but when I sort of opened my eyes and looked, on my left was this really gorgeous 17-year-old girl in a bikini. Long blonde hair. I looked on the other side, there's an equally gorgeous redhead 17-year-old in a bikini. And I really got worried. Imagine it. There you are, Ajahn Brahm, sitting on the beach, and this, I'll tell you why I know it was 17-year-old, in a few seconds. one a beautiful young Parisi on my left and another equally beautiful young girl on my right. How could you explain that if someone took a photograph and put it in the newspapers? It wouldn't. I'd be dead as a monk. What had happened, totally innocent, it was the last day of the school year when they did their exams, university entrance exams, the very last exam was that morning. I didn't know such things. I didn't have children and worrying about such stuff. And as soon as they finished their exam in the afternoon, about 3 o'clock, school is finished, all that tension of doing exams is over. And they just all got into their bathers, the girls into their bikinis, and they went down to the beach to celebrate. School exams are over, woohoo! And two of those girls, they saw this really still figure in a brown robe and bald head sitting on the beach. You've heard it, they did ask me, but I didn't respond because I didn't hear them, I was in meditation. And they were really fascinated. Who is this? How can you do this? And so they actually sat next to me on either side, just waiting. They waited about half an hour for me to come out of my meditation so they could ask me, you know, really interesting questions. What are you doing? How can you do that? What is Buddhism? And I just made sure my questions were very, the answers, sorry, were very brief, because I couldn't get out of there quick enough. That's what happens. Totally innocent, but just what happens. So I never went to meditate on that beach ever again. You never know what might happen next time. But anyway, that was really, almost got into trouble, but managed good karma to get out of it. They're totally innocent, but nevertheless, they do. So anyway, everybody has the ability to meditate. You're all lotuses. And the outside of the lotuses, have a look at them when they're closed up. That's why I talked about those girls and bikinis. That's why I don't go walking on this resort, especially down by the beach or other places. So, all I ever do is just those three places. But everybody, so I don't know if there's a lotus pond in this hotel, this resort. If you do find a lotus pond, you'll know that during the night time, the lotuses are all closed up. Look at those lotuses when they're closed up. And there's no lotuses on there. And you can actually see, if you never knew that was a lotus, you would never expect the inside with these incredibly beautiful fragrant petals. It's a surprise. When that lotus opens up in such beauty, in such fragrance, in such profound colours in the inside of the lotus. That's the first accurate and inspiring part of that symbol in each one of you. It may be all closed up. On the outside you look rough, but if you blow yourself out on the inside, you see all the challenges, the enlightenment, the whole world is inside of you right now. And that's one of the reasons why I wouldn't teach anyone meditation. People in prison have done terrible, terrible things, so rubbish, it's so dirty on the outside. But inside, you open up a little bit, it's amazing what's inside of you. They get even more surprised than I do. But is there. So each one of you can do it. Whether you will do it or not depends on whether you follow the instructions for long enough. But it's all possible for every one of you in this room. No one is impossible. So that gives you confidence it's possible. Now what do you do? The warmth and light of the sun are the triggers which open the lotus. When the sun comes up in the morning, the warmth and the light open up the outermost petals. Slowly, gradually, but always happens. And that leaves the first layer of petals inside the hard outer shell. So they can receive the warmth and light of the sun so they can open up. So the next layer of petals can receive the warmth and light of the sun, so they can open up. They open up layer by layer. When one layer opens up, that gives the opportunity for the next layer inside to receive warmth and light of the sun, and they open up. And the deeper you go into that lotus, the more beautiful, the more subtle, the thinner are the petals, and the more fragrant they are. Just like here, the deeper you go, the more beauty, the more piti sukha, the more joy, and the more profound these experiences become, the more full of wisdom, insight, not just beauty. So the trick is just to have the kindness in opening the door of your heart without any wanting, without any desire, without any plans to achieve something. That's the kindness. And just the awareness. Just watching, being a passenger, and allowing that awareness to get stronger and stronger and stronger. And it opens up. Now, that is the process. That's all you need to do. Just to be kind and to be aware. That's all. No effort. And it also has a great advantage of saying the next layer of petals is right inside the one you're experiencing now. I don't know how often it is people say, well, I've got to this stage in the meditation, what should I do next? I am very still, should I now do insight? Or should I now do metta? And the answer to those questions is always the same. Stop it! Stop doing things! Stop looking at the next moment. As you've lost your present moment awareness, you're off into the future again, planning, doing stuff. Stay precisely where you are. Don't go anywhere. Stay put. If I was a dog trainer, that's what I'd tell you. Stay. Sit. Oh, it's hard to actually to understand that, because we're always in the habit of going to something else. That's why the lotus isn't open. Stay where you are. Well, I also said last night, what you're experiencing is not important. That will change by itself. What is crucial in meditation is you're reacting to what you're experiencing. Are you just opening the door of your heart to it? Giving it the warmth of the sun? Are you really being aware of it? Are you trying to get rid of it? Trying to go deeper. Go further. I don't want this. I want the real stuff. Actually, Mum always talks about these lights. I've never had a light yet, once. Not at all. Sick. I need to get one this time. This time it's really it. I'm really going for this retreat. Well, you're wasting your time with those sorts of attitudes. Just be where you are. And you let it happen. So the next stage of meditation is right inside the stage you're experiencing now. Right in the middle of it. You don't go to the left or right, above and below. You stay put and go inside. You go inside. Not somewhere else. That's why they always say it. It's one of the great descriptions of the Dhamma, Adi Classica, where it says, what is it? Upanayaka. Always going inwards. Not going onwards. I hate that translation. Going onwards and onwards and onwards. There's no end to going onwards. They're going inwards. Always going in. Into this. When you're in the center of this, you go in the center of the center. In the middle of the center of the center. Always going right inside. That's where you find the juicy stuff. The insights, the bliss, the freedom, the enlightenment. Always going in. And that is what the symbol of the lotus gives to you. But it also helps because people want to know the landmarks of meditation. And this is where you can understand why the Buddha taught such things by the Anapanasati Sutta, the stages of meditation. It was a good teaching, but it's a dangerous teaching, because as soon as there are stages, then people have the idea of attainment. What stage are you at? People say, I get stuck at stage 3, and I can't move on. And I say, listen, you never move on. That's why you get stuck there. You move in. Go deeper into stage 3, and then you'll find stage 4. If you want to go on to the next stage, you never achieve that. You must go inside. So, the stages of meditation. The outside stage, the first stage of meditation, is what you're experiencing right now. The stupid old body, tired, aching, old. You've got to go inside of it. That's why we are mindful and kind of our body. Aware of it. How is your body right now? How does it feel? Not just that, okay, that's not good enough. Could be much more particular than that. Please feel it. And be kind to it. Open the door of your heart to these feelings, these pains, whatever it is. And that's where they disappear. People, this is one of the great insights you get from the very first stages of meditation. Just being aware of your body. Mindfulness of the body with kindness, then kindfulness. Your body relaxes, it heals up, it becomes so peaceful, so relaxed. I did go past the spa this morning on my way to my room. There's a spa in this hotel, it's actually there's two spas. There's one you have to pay money for, and there's the one in this room. Why do I call this a spa? It is because if you practice a meditation, you relax. Well, I've never been in a spa, but people have told me about it. They put like hot stones on your skin when they massage it. What does a massage actually do? If you massage a part of your body, your mind just goes straight to that part of the body. You're aware of that body when someone's touching it. They put a hot stone, you can feel it. Or they put hot oil or warm oil, is that what they're doing in spas? You feel this beautiful feeling over your skin. It arouses mindfulness. And it's also very gentle and kind. That by itself works. It doesn't matter what flavour the oil is, or just how heavy the stone is, or what type of rock it is. For me, just a lump of concrete would do. The magic of it, the effect in there, is arousing mindfulness of your body and the kindness to allow it to relax. Why in a hot tub? Why does that make you relax? Because it's a pleasant feeling, it brings awareness to your body, and it's a kind, it's a gentle feeling. A warm bath. I usually don't indulge in hot baths. You know the last time I had a hot bath? I think I deserve this. I convinced myself I deserved it. And sometimes you wonder when I try and convince myself I deserve to indulge. Because sometimes, you know, your defilements can be the person who convinces you. That was when I went to Bhutan and walked up Tiger's Nest. A really tough walk. And down again, I thought, okay, if any time I deserve a hot bath, it's after walking up to Tiger's Nest. In Bhutan. That's the last time I had a hot bath. And anyway, but it relaxes you because you can feel the water, you can feel the heat, and you just let go. So that first part of meditation, don't need a hot bath or a spa. Just be aware of your body. Be aware of it. Let's see the light of the sun and the kindness and warmth. Your body opens up. And when it opens up, the tension, the tightness, the squashing is relieved. Inflammations. That's apparently the people explained to me that story of the lady who healed her arthritis totally in needs to do it. So they can understand it. It's the information. And to actually believe that information, to relax it all, so the information just dissipates. That's what you do when you meditate. Your body gets so comfortable. It's also why I really object to people who say, you have to sit cross-legged in full lotus. Straighten your back. The left hand has to be on the right hand with the thumb slightly touching. You're pressing too much, too far apart. Walk on my back. Relax. Do a nice seat. Or, there's a couple of wise people, against the wall. You come to my temple. Those are the first seats which get taken in my temple. The wall seats. If you lean back against the wall, put your feet out. That's really, really comfortable. The wall seats in the temple are usually the most the first taken. They're the A seats. So you relax the body. When your body relaxes with mindfulness and kindness, then you can let it go. You go inside of it to the next layer of meditation, which is your emotional world. If your body is tense, it has to relax it, it doesn't open up. You can force the mind inside, but now it can't remain there. You get headache here, a pain there. That is the great Buddha's middle way. Don't sort of put your body in uncomfortable positions for too long. Relax. Eat well. Sleep well. So when you come up in the morning, you feel really good. Oh yeah, I'd better take that. Preparation. So that first day of pedals is the body. You go inside of that. So straight away. Can women become Buddhas? What are you talking about? Women, men, that's just the outer layer of petals. Westerner, Asian, Afro, there's a matter of all, that's an outer layer of petals, that's so irrelevant. You go inside. And you go into your emotional world, your mind. So, what do you have to go into next? You know what happens when your body disappears? Thinking about this, thinking about that, especially the past and the future. So, get out of here, past. No future. What happens? It comes over even stronger. So how do we go inside this way of petals of my time, thinking about stuff in the future and the past? Mindful and kind. A lot of times people forget the kindness when they try to get to the present moment. Let go of the past. Come on, let go. Get out of here. Try to boot the past out of your mind. It never works. So you are kind. Give some loving kindness to your past. Soften it up. What do I mean by that? Someone hurt you, they cheated you. Give them the benefit of the doubt. Be kind to those bastards. Be kind. Oh, maybe they're having a bad day. Maybe they thought they were doing the right thing. Maybe they weren't brought up properly. Maybe they got in with a bad crowd. Whatever it is, find any excuse, even ones which really stretch things as much as you possibly can, just to be kind to the people who have hurt you, to the events which have made your life difficult. And your own faults. Be kind to yourself. There you go, my temple. Never mind. You're trying your best. No one is perfect. Never mind, my temple. All this stupid jokes you said. Going to the beach, sitting next to girls in bikinis. Never mind. If you are kind to yourself, you are softening the past and it vanishes. You don't get rid of the past with ill will towards the past. That is actually one of the reasons why that I got into healing people with big traumas, multiple rapes and tortures. and kindness. That beautiful assembly of open the door of your heart, mother going through the forehead, where you imagine a staircase, and that little girl who was raped brutally is outside of you. Scared, terrified, rejected. You invite her in. Come up, come inside. You have grace and kindness and terror of the past. You really understand how the mind works. That is so, so powerful as a way of healing the past. Don't forget it. It doesn't disappear by the wave of a magic wand. It's always there, but it's not a problem anymore. You can't do it, you can let it go. So you soften the past up. Whatever happened to you, give it beautiful kindness. You open the door of your heart to your past. Unconditional mindfulness. And the same with the future. You're kind to the future. I don't know what's going to happen. If you give it a beautiful kindness, well, it's okay. It'll work a while. You'll be able to manage. All your fears. Oh, I'm going to get the biopsy result when I go back after this retreat. I'll be kind to it. Probably it's not cancer. And even worrying about it will make it worse. Being kind to it now will make it less. But anyway, if it isn't cancer and it's terminal, yay, I've escaped the old people's home, yay! When you're kind, the past and the future loses its sharpness. It becomes soft and fluffy like PJ's cat. So you treat the past and the future just like a psychotic cat who was traumatized by its upbringing in India. You become soft and amenable. You don't have to worry about it. It can vanish. You can let it go. So when the past and the future does come up, don't try and kick it out of your mind with violence. Get out of here. Always be kind to it. Thank you for coming to visit me. Thank you. All these memories of the past. Open the door of your heart to them. Somehow or other they're important. Why, I don't know. When you're kind to them, you soften them, you weaken them, and they vanish. They don't come up again. That is how you go inside of time. Not by forcing it, by being aware and being kind. That's all. And what happens next? You come to this beautiful present moment. You go inside the body, inside the mind, just now. In the present moment, when you first are aware of the present moment, you want to describe it, you want to think about it, because we are addicted with our thinking, trying to encapsulate it with our words, with our descriptions. That's why the dictionary gets bigger and bigger every year, more and more words, more and more misunderstandings. So, we have a thought. Never try to get rid of the thoughts. How about going deep inside of the kindness? Thank you, thought, for visiting me. You can stay as long as you like. But aware that you're not pushing those thoughts along. When people used to say, and I used to think, oh, the thoughts just come into my mind from nowhere. They don't come from nowhere. You go looking for them. You fish for them. You want them to happen. Because you're not kind enough to the silence. You try to destroy it. Because you're afraid of the silence. So when you're kind, overcomes fear. Just like your cat overcame its fear when he knew it was loved and cared for. So you're kind. If you're kind to the present moment, open the door of your heart to this present moment, no matter what it is, you're tired, let yourself be sleepy, stop fighting it. Open the door of your heart to whatever's happening. Make peace with your kind. tender present moments fades. Whatever you're kind to becomes a friend, and a friend always likes hanging out with you. So in the present moment, you go deep into the lotus. Present moment, this is why Eckhart Tolle, you just started raving on about the present moment. You ain't got nowhere yet. That's a good start. That is actually a pretty happy place to stay. And then inside the present moment, you never go looking for anything. You know the next layer of petals, you're mindful, aware, and kind to the present moment. Inside of that, you'll find your breathing. Just there. You don't go looking for it. So often in meditation, people say, oh, watch the tip of your nose. Your breath go in, your breath go out. Watch the abdomen. Watch the breath here. Watch the breath do that. To me, that's too much control. It's not what you do, it's what happens. I never go looking for my breath. And my breath meditation is one of the key meditations I do. I just relax. Let go. Be kind. And then after the present moment, you're just aware of your breathing. And the reason is because there's nothing else to watch. You go inside, everything else has disappeared, you just got your breath. Breathing in, breathing out, everything which is moving. And you're watching your breath. How do I watch my breath? What should I do? Just be kind. Breath in, go whichever way you want. Being kind. And to always be kind to my breath, I always remember the importance of my breath. I'm so grateful for it. When I'm busy doing other things, when I'm sleeping, oh, my breath always does its job. Now, sometimes people who work for you, I just had an email this morning, some of my mugs have just misunderstood, and were a problem in budget and ownership. Oh, even mugs you can't trust. But my breath has never let me down once. Never, ever. If it had, who would be here, would I? Wherever I am, it just goes in just the right amount of air, takes all the bad stuff out. I'm just so grateful to it. So it's so easy to be kind to your breath. How grateful. Gratitude to it. Thank you, breath. For 65 years of breathing. Without any complaints at all. Thank you. And that gives this beautiful opportunity to be kind to my breath. To be aware of it. You know what happens? Then the breath becomes very delightful. Whatever you're kind to, usually becomes very easy to stay with. You have joy in your relationship with your breath. If you're kind to your husband, you have a beautiful relationship. If you're kind to your husband, you're kind to your mother-in-law, the relationship changes. You have a beautiful time together. Kindness is one of my big mistakes in life. Far too kind. Which means there are far too many monks, far too many nuns, far too many monasteries I'm supposed to be looking after, far too many Buddhist communities I'm supposed to visit. I just wear myself out. Well, I don't mind. I might be kind. So, with that kindness, people like to hang out with you. If I was a fierce monk, if I was really telling you off all the time, you hopeless meditators, I've been teaching you how many years and you still don't know how to meditate. I'm wasting my time, you stupid idiots. I don't know why I spend my time coming on these retreats when you never get it right. So I just can't do that. That's about as far as I can. And none of you are convinced, are you? It's just not my nature. So, but kindness draws people to you. If you're kind to your breath, the breath stays with you. The breath wanders off, it's because you're a control freak. Your relationship needs to be sorted out. It's like your breath is fighting for a divorce from you. Because you mistreated it. So be kind to your breath, and your breath is great friends. You don't ask anything from your breath, you just like hanging out with her. With your breath. And that's a beautiful state of mind. So peaceful. Just watching your breath, coming in breath, come out. Open up the petals. So you get to the the full awareness of the breath, as you mentioned, from the beginning of the in-breath to the end of the in-breath. It's not something to strive for. If you try and do that, you're messing up the whole process. So what happens? Watching the breath, breath go in, breath go out, with kindness, you see more of the breath. You see more. Until you see the whole breath. The very beginning of an in-breath to the end of an in-breath. The very beginning of the out-breath to the end of the out-breath. The whole breath go in, go out. Beautiful kindness and awareness. So easy. No problem at all, it just happens. Don't try to do it, you don't struggle to hold on to it, it just happens. So totally relaxed and at peace. Beautiful, gorgeous veil of petals. And of course that turns into the delightful breath. We used to call it the beautiful breath, but you don't see it, you feel it, so joyful. Breathing in, I can do this for hours. You do it for hours. Just watching the breath go in and come out. So peaceful, so still. Free of so many burdens, don't have to do stuff. You really are getting away from it all. You're having a real holiday of all the struggle of life. No struggle at all. Now you're going really much deeper than whatever you get in that spa. All for no money at all. Totally free. Anytime you want, you don't have to come to Phuket to do this. You can do it in Singapore, you can do it in Hong Kong. You can do it in the middle of the market. Please be watching the rest of the week. And of course, the full awareness of the breath opens up and you get a delightful breath. And those are the beginnings of the beautiful inner petals of the lotus. Breathing out, oh, this is nice. Breathing out, this is so wonderful. Because you're enjoying it, it's so easy to watch. And then, because there's no effort, seeking has disappeared a long time ago. So joyful. Then the petals really start to open up. And inside that delightful breath. Wow! Never seen petals like this before. These are limitless. Beautiful lights in the mind. If you follow the instructions of Doug Rush, those limiters which are inside the delightful breath, so simple and peaceful and beautiful. Not spiraling, moving around, or exploding like the firework limiters. Not complicated limiters like seeing sceneries or people or whatever. It's amazing when people, these aren't limiters, but they're so complicated. And when people see eyes looking at them, or monsters or angels. So complicated. Probably because you've watched too many movies. But it's nice and simple, just a beautiful light, that's all. That's the limited stage of the meditation group. And it's right there inside each one of you. Right now, you just need to open up the inside. Now you go into the beautiful, wonderful parts. So what do you do next when you've got a limiter? You don't do anything. Just be mindful and open the door of your heart to the limiter. Whatever it is. Any color, you don't control it. You don't work with limiters. This is not work. That's why I like Buddhism. It's not work. Have enough of work. Don't know about you, I'm fed up with work. You work, you never get paid. You always get exploited by your boss sitting in the back of the No, you don't get exploited. I told you, please exploit me even some more. But working is never finished. The job is never done. It's never perfect enough. 33 years I figured out I've been building Bodhinyana Monastery. Is it finished yet? No. It will never be finished. Until I let it go. Okay, enough. Done. Not perfect, good enough. So work, this is not work. This is the total opposite of work, it's being. Not going anywhere, not trying to change anything, it's being. And you really are being now, it's beautiful. It blows your mind. Wow. I've never seen before. Woohoo. And nearby to what you do next, absolutely nothing to speak behind. Just be aware. And then that limiter, you fall inside of it. Go in, the petal opens up. And inside that, now you have the first jhana. Wow. That should really be something totally different than anything you've experienced before. Totally. Most blissful you've ever had. That is one of the reasons why I became a monk. Getting into those deep states of meditation, that was much better than any pleasure I ever experienced. Wow. I wanted to find out more about these. And then, beside the first chapter, right in the middle of it, you just leave it alone. And then you go, it opens up into the second. And you have those sorts of things inside of you. It's amazing. One of the things afterwards, which really grows your mind again, was when you read the teachings of the Buddha. How many of you have gone to the four holy sites of Buddhism? No, you haven't. I always ask trick questions. Oh, never answer my trick question. I go, do you have? Oh my goodness, I'm going over time. Never mind. In the four holy places of Buddhism, and this is in the Chöghaspadogama Sutta, the simile of the elephant footprint, where the Buddha lived. His body was born, got enlightened, first teaching, and died in most places. This is his body, his physical stuff. It's the Rupa Kanda. What about the Buddha's mind? Where did that live? And that's why in this sutra it says it lived in the first jhana, the second jhana, the third jhana, the fourth jhana. That's where the Buddha really hung out. That's where he lived. And when you get that first jhana for the first time, you understand this. You are visiting a holy place where the Buddha lived. And the stuff which still makes me just ooh, is that in your first jhana, when you experience that, your mind is no different than what the Buddha experienced in that state. There's only one first jhana. When your mind is in that state, you know how the Buddha helped. 100%. So if you want to find out what it's like to be a Buddha, get into a jhana. Right now, 36 centuries afterwards, different place, old girl, young man, doesn't matter what race, what sexual orientation, whether you're sick, whether you're healthy, you can do it. And that is inspiring, when you do stuff like that. That's why, in those sentences it says, the joy which you experience, which is the main object of your meditation, experiencing bliss, call it some bodhisukha. They call it enlightenment happiness. It's not enlightenment, but it takes enlightenment. Same experience. Only it doesn't last that long if you're not an arahant. But it's a good taste. That is what is open to you in this retreat. I don't come here just to teach you to be peaceful and happy, to get rid of your depressions and addictions. I want you to go to work. Why not? Something about the discrimination, which I was always against, I don't know why, for the rights of gay, lesbian, transgenders to just to be themselves and not to be oppressed, or for women to be able to become bikinis. Now, fighting for you. So you can get right as well. Not just monks and nuns. Why not? Why can't you do it? Give it a try. Some people do it.
why not you?
And that's how it's done.
It's done through
simile on the lotus. All you have to do, don't do any more, for goodness sake, just be mindful, be kind, be patient, your hands. And then the whole lotus opens up, and you will be amazed. I didn't do anything. All this stuff just happened. Well done, now you understand the path. As it says in the Wisnudi Magga, the path is, but no traveller upon it is seen. Something beautiful. The path is, but no traveller upon it is seen. If you travel it, if you do it, if you make it happen, the path closes up. If you let go, if you're just kind and aware, the traveller vanishes. The doer takes away, disappears, and with it the being. Doer and being. You vanish. Then you try this happen. Then you get some insight into not self. Why this happens when you vanish. The path is the no traveller on it is seen. Da da da. So, that is the 12 for this morning. For you to brainwash, be brainwashed, study minutes, study meditation, just let it go and enjoy yourselves. So now we can have tea break, let it go break. I did talk for an extra 13 minutes, but there we go, I can't stop, so I thought it was important. So have a nice tea break or toilet break. But when you go outside, go to the toilet, have a cup of tea or have a glass of water, just don't talk, it's important at all. Do it silently. And then you can go and I come back here at 10:30 and do some more meditation. Off you go.